Today's guest brings us a message about light and life and seeing that in many ways will surprise you and open up your thinking and perceptions about what and how we see and don't see. Hello, everyone. I'm Pamela Brewer, welcoming you to this edition of Mind Talk. Dr. Jacob Israel Lieberman, along with Gina and Eric Lieberman, has created a book entitled Luminous Life, How the Science of Light Unlocks the Art of Living. And they have described a course of thinking and awareness for us that I would suggest is unique, it's new, or perhaps it's age old and we just never thought about it this way. Let's find out. Dr. Lieberman, welcome to Mind Talk.
Great, thank you.
Now, I'm going to ask you to answer my question. Is it a new way of thinking that you are encouraging us to engage in, or is this a new concept or an old concept?
It's not a concept at all. It's an underlying principle of life. And it's not a question of should we think about this in a new way. It's actually not about thinking at all. What is different about this is that our whole concept of life and what actually occurs in life, from my perspective, is viewed through a very, very narrow lens of our ideas about life versus the actual reality of life. Most of us consider the way we live normal. Very few of us consider it natural. And because of that, we have an epidemic of disease and discontent. About 92% of disease is called chronic illness. And what we know scientifically is the only thing that really impacts chronic illness in any significant manner is a change in lifestyle. And what a change in lifestyle is, returning from living according to certain ideas and habits that are not supportive of health and wellness, and returning to what is actually natural in our life. And so what I'm hoping the book shares, which you refer to as unique, is truth beyond opinion. We read new things, we see new things all the time, and they sound very interesting, but they're sort of like fad diets. They last for a couple of weeks, and then we find ourselves just going back to what we were doing before that. I'm hoping that this book touches something deeper inside, some internal sense of knowing or common sense about an actuality of life. And so the whole book is sharing insights, revelations that I've had throughout my 70 years of living, integrated with a great deal of science and clinical experience, which usually takes years to catch up with those revelations that we have. So the book is really speaking about something that occurs in the plant kingdom and in the animal kingdom and throughout this universe, that we have been conditioned to forget because we're looking at life through the ideas of what we call the conscious mind rather than experiencing life as it is.
You know, what's interesting, and I guess I'm kind of stuck on it, so I'd like to go back to it for a moment, is the distinction that you make between normal versus natural. And it's an interesting distinction because if you really think about it, I would suggest normal, what we consider normal, is actually quite unnatural. So you're asking
That's right.
us to consider doing something that is more human, more humane than what we typically do to and with ourselves.
Well, what I'm suggesting is that everything we do is actually normal. Natural is we're not actually doing. You see, if you look throughout the universe, you'll notice something rather fascinating. Everything seems to be self-activating and self-regulating. The planets are not being pushed in their orbit around the sun. Something is animating that movement. Something is literally breathing our bodies and pumping our hearts. There's nothing within our physiology that we are regulating by thinking. The physiology is all functioning on its own, interestingly enough, miraculously. The physiology of Mother Nature is a perfect reflection of that. It's all self-activating, self-regulating. It's all occurring on its own. And yet, we've been led to believe that in order to live, we have to think ahead, we have to make things happen, we have to work hard, as if this is the only place in life where things are not self-regulating. And what I've come to realize is there's no part of our physiology that's designed to initiate action. Everything within us is responding to something. What is it responding to? It's responding to an intelligence within this universe that seems to be aware of everything simultaneously and animates the movement of everything so that every what appears as separate things are actually functioning in a state of flow that seem not to interfere with each other. We call it congruence and coherence scientifically, but in everyday talk, it's presence. It's what happens naturally within a creature that lives in the woods. As an example, if you look at an animal during the summer months of the year and you measure the thickness of its skin or the amount of hair it has, it's all perfect for the length of the days, the temperature of the season. As the season begins to change from summer to fall and eventually to winter, the days are getting shorter, and the quantity and quality of light in the atmosphere is changing. Those continual changes in the atmosphere are continually cueing the trillions of cells in that creature's body, because every cell of the body has eyes that are designed to detect and respond to light. And I'll explain more about light a little later. So each cell of the body is continually orchestrating its internal function and upgrading itself to synchronize with Mother Nature in each moment. So when winter comes, the bear doesn't wake up in the morning and say, "Oh my God, I forgot to buy my overcoat at Costco." Its body is already prepared for the winter or for the snowfall. It doesn't have to do anything. It is all occurring naturally. And what I am saying here in the book is that the same phenomenon is occurring throughout the plant kingdom as well as the animal kingdom, and is occurring in our lives all the time. The same exact thing is occurring in our lives.
You know, what's interesting is that we live so much, I mean, certainly here in this country, we live so much in the theory that, as you said earlier, we've got to work, we've got to do things, we have all these gadgets, we've got to work. And so as you're talking about actually doing less work, it sounds like, and being more attentive really to the universe, around us and the naturally occurring phenomena, I bet you there's at least a few people who are getting very anxious thinking about working less.
Well, what I'm sharing is this. You see, the body responds automatically to things, and it responds way before we have any awareness of it. For instance, most of us are living under the illusion that we are deciding moment by moment what we're going to be doing in life. In actuality, that's not occurring at all. 7 to 10 seconds before we are aware of making a choice, the brain is already way ahead of us moving in that direction. We're not the initiators of the directive. We merely become aware of it after the fact. So I'm not speaking about doing less. I'm saying that the doing is happening automatically. It occurs by itself. You know, every morning, whether we have an alarm clock or not, our body wakes up when the light comes up. Every evening, we don't have to be reminded to go to sleep. There's a certain point, the body starts yawning, the light levels are low, and we drift off into sleep. When we have to eat, we don't have to think about, oh, am I supposed to eat? Is it that time of the day? Something just walks us to the refrigerator. We get what we need. When we have to evacuate our bowels, the same thing happens. The same thing is happening with every function that we have. The problem is we are living according to theories, and we assume these theories are facts, but they're not. Science is a wonderful field of continually changing theories, but the theories never end. You never ultimately get to truth. You just get to some new idea. And what I'm sharing is there's something that is different than that. So if you take the word belief, for instance, and you put it into a thesaurus, the words idea, thought, theory, concept all come up as synonymous with belief. They mean the same thing. If you then look down to the antonyms, the words that mean the opposite of belief, one of the main words is truth. And all of a sudden you're shocked. Oh my God.
It's interesting.
Everything that I believe is actually not ultimate truth. And then you have to ask, what was Jesus talking about when he said, the truth shall set you free? And what is that truth? And so my entire, this book is really a reflection of my life's process and how my own life has evolved and how I've come from being a physician and a scientist to someone who's really interested in the ultimate science of life, because at the end of the day, we're all interested in health and happiness, but few of us are either healthy or happy. And then there's something beyond happiness called contentment. And so once what I am attempting to share is something about the way our lives work that's not based on a, oh, this is an interesting idea. Something, and don't ask me how I know this because I don't personally know this, but there's a level of truth here that is beyond any interesting ideas. Pretty much all the things that I share in the book are direct experiences. And when I say direct experience, I'm not talking about Jacob Lieberman having an experience, you know, which might be the same as Pamela Brewer having an experience. I'm talking about those instances where all of a sudden you have a wake-up call. All of a sudden, you have a spark of insight, an epiphany, an aha moment, where you see something in a way you have never seen it before, and life changes. Not because you've done something over and over again, as we're led to believe, but because the whole neuroplastic mechanism of our brain begins to rewire itself because of this experience. I'll give you a quick example.
Okay.
I used to be an optometrist, and I wore glasses for many years. I had this very profound experience in 1976 where I sat down to meditate what I did each day. And when I had some interesting revelations during the meditation, and when I came out of that experience, my eyesight, my measurable ability to see, had improved by 300% with absolutely no changes to my eyes. The prescription was the same, but something was seeing much better. And then I had to ask the question, even though I don't know how you would even ask such a question, because we've been led to believe we see with our eyes. But that led me to realize there's actually something else seeing within us. And in uncovering what it is, what is the source of our seeing, all of a sudden we realize that we are not who we think we are, that we're actually something different. And by the way, that change that happened 42 years ago, when I was, I think, 28 or something at the time, and I'm 70 years old now, I have never had a pair of glasses on my face for distance or for reading since that day.
Now, that's an instantaneous change
that occurs without doing anything, any effort, any intent, any daydreaming about it, any thinking ahead. It just happens. Now, we have that happening a lot. We have people that have spontaneous remissions from disease. We just think it's some weird kind of thing that we can't explain. And what I'm sharing from my own direct experience is that I know that people's vision, along with many other things, can shift in profound ways without actually doing anything. So that was a profound instance that has altered the course of my life and altered the areas of life that I have been inspired to look at, has brought me many revelations. And this whole book is a new paradigm on living and a new paradigm on understanding that our lives, just like the life of a plant, are continually being guided by a profound fundamental energy in this universe called light. And we should probably speak a little bit about light, because
absolutely,
most people have no idea what light is. You know, we look out the window and we say, wow, there's a lot of light today. Actually, light is totally invisible. What we experience when we look outside on a sunny day is not light at all. We're experiencing a perceptual phenomenon called brightness. Light in and of itself is totally invisible. You can never magnify it enough to see it.
Dr. Liberman, you talked about an experience that you and I both know has got to have somebody, at least one or two or 20 somebodies who are listening right now saying, yeah, right, that's not true, that's not real, this is a hoax, I don't believe in miracles, what is he talking about? And as you might imagine, I am talking about the statement, the experience that you just shared with us, particularly as an optometrist. It's an interesting experience that you experienced, and I quote you, a sudden and significant improvement in eyesight without surgery, without eyeglass changes. How is that possible? How are the skeptics to believe that something like that is even possible?
The skeptics will never believe it. and it doesn't make any difference. I realized many years ago, you can never convince someone that requires convincing. And to think that we can understand something because we convince each other because of our ideas is just as silly. I was led to believe this was impossible. I was merely experimenting with my own vision because I was concerned about the fact that every patient that came into the office, their eyes continually deteriorated. When I started looking at the statistics and realized that eyesight deterioration is the biggest health epidemic in the world, I said, what is wrong with this picture? Person comes in every year and says, I can't see. And every year we give them a stronger prescription than they had the year before. We keep treating it with the same solution, but it keeps getting worse. It's sort of like going to your physician and saying, gee, I have a flu or I have some infection. And they said, take this. And you find that it gets worse and you go back to them and they say, oh, just keep taking more of it. That doesn't make any sense.
And that's precisely what happens.
That's exactly what's going on. So my inquiry and my experimentation with myself first was to try to rationalize in my own mind, what are we doing? Why are we doing this? What is the factual basis of this? And so this experiment that led to this profound shift, I can tell you, I go to the optometrist and sometimes to my ophthalmologist on a yearly basis. I get my examination. They examine me. First, they check my eyesight. And then they examine me and they say, wait a minute, this is impossible. Because I have a significant amount of astigmatism. In the past, I was nearsighted and I had a pretty good amount of astigmatism that really didn't allow me to see well. Now I'm farsighted and I have even more astigmatism. It should be more difficult for me to read, but I read without any problem. I sit all day and work at a computer and read books. I passed all of my driver's tests. And what I'm sharing with you is no one needs to believe what I'm saying. I think, I could be wrong, but I believe my own optometrist wrote a piece for this new book about that she had never experienced anything like this. So I've been getting my eyes checked yearly for the last 40 years, and every doctor says the same thing. This is impossible or whatever. I haven't had any tickets. I haven't had any accidents. I see quite well. And so what I'm sharing with you is I don't know exactly how this occurs, but I'll share with you what my sense is. Okay.
Okay.
Ralph Waldo Emerson said something that was very, very profound. He said, there's a principle that underlies everything. In other words, there's something that's fundamental to everything that exists. And then he goes on. He says, it's a simple, undescribed, undescribable presence residing silently within us. And then he says, we are not to do, but to let do. Not to work, but to be worked upon. So what he's saying is, there's something within us that is noticing everything. It doesn't speak, so it's not the mind that we hear chattering. It's something else. And then he goes on to repeat something I spoke about before. He says, we're not made to do things, but just to allow things. We're not meant to work, but to be worked upon. In other words, something just moves us in one direction or another. So let's just talk about that a little bit. if our listeners right now just close their eyes for a moment and just sit, they may notice that there's thinking going on, or maybe there's worrying going on. The reason that we are aware of the mind that is chattering so often during our day is because something is observing it. And that something that is observing it is totally silent and sees from no point of view. It just notices things. And that is the silent observer that Emerson was speaking about, that he said is the principle underlying everything. Now, if you go back and you go all the way back to the Bible starts to describe a creative force, which it calls God. And it says, God is omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent, all powerful, all knowing, everywhere at the same time. And then it makes this statement. It compares God to light. It says God is light. If you look at spiritual texts going back God knows how many years, when they speak about spirituality or consciousness, they continually compare it to light. If you speak to a physicist and you say, what is the nature of reality? And they say, well, all of these things that we see that appear solid, it's actually an illusion that's created by our consciousness and our perceptual mechanisms. So you say, well, what's under that? Oh, well, what's underneath the illusion that things are solid is energy. Everything is just energy. So I say to the physicist, energy? Well, at the most fundamental level, what do you call that energy? He said, oh, that's the energy of light. And it's interesting that light is the foundation of the science of quantum physics. Now, that may sound like, why is that important? Because the theory of quantum physics or quantum mechanics is the most successful scientific theory in history. More than 50% of all the technology in the world is based to a large degree on the theory of quantum mechanics, which is based on light, the behavior of light. And so when you ask the physicists, how does light behave, even though they use different terms, they'll basically tell you that light behaves as if it is all-powerful, all-knowing, and everywhere at the same time. What I'm saying is, whether you are looking at light from a perspective of religion, spirituality, or science, they all converge at exactly the same point. And that light within us that illuminates things and allows this life to be visible to us, that light is that silent observer that Emerson was speaking about, principle underlying all things.
You say pretty early on in Luminous Life how the science of light unlocks the art of living, that anything that catches your eye is actually looking for you. And I was really struck by that. Can you say a little bit about what that means?
Sure. See, we believe when we look out, like I'm looking out my window now, I see a tree. And my sense is that I'm looking and I see this tree. But in actuality, the eyes, along with all the other cells of our body, have eyes that are designed to detect and respond to light. What's interesting, I mentioned quantum physics a moment ago. The smallest packet, if you will, of information is called a photon. A photon. The eyes that are on our face, the cells in our eyes, are designed to detect and respond to a single photon. That is the leading edge of quantum physics. In other words, our eyes, which we think are designed to see the trees and so on, are actually designed to see the invisible before it is rendered into form, because light is not visible. And so the fact that the cells in our physical eyes and the cells in all the other parts of our body are detecting invisible energy called photons, it means that everything is responding way before we have any conscious awareness of it, just as I gave the example about the animal in the forest. So what I'm sharing with you is, we think that we choose to look at something and then we move our eyes toward it. It doesn't work that way at all. The eyes literally do not move at all voluntarily. It's an involuntary reflex. The eyes only move when something grabs their attention. What would grab their attention? You're driving down the street and a driver from your right is about to go through the stop sign. Something catches your eye and you move to get out of the way, or a child runs out into the street, or you see your soulmate, whatever the example is. So what I've come to realize, it's not the eye looking for the light, it's the light looking for the eye. And then you have to ask yourself a question. Why is something catching our eye? Because when something catches our eye, we then reorient our body so it's aligned with whatever that is that's calling to us, whether it's a person or a situation. And then we start moving toward that. That is what grabs our attention, if you will. And it grabs our attention because it could be a life or death situation, or it could be something super important. But what's looking for us, what grabs our attention, is absolutely the next thing we need to attend to. And so if we just follow that rationale, we will notice that life is actually continually directing us. Because the primary purpose of vision is to guide physical movement. How does it guide physical movement? Something that requires our attention catches our eye before we're consciously aware of it. The eye turns towards it, the body reorients itself, and then it starts moving us in a certain situation. And when that happens in different ways, we call it inspiration. You know, how often are you in a restaurant and all of a sudden something out of nowhere enters your awareness and you say, oh my God, I just had an insight, and you grab the napkin and you start writing things down. Now, a little later, you'll say, I just thought up this amazing thing. Actually, we didn't think it up at all. It literally caught our inner eye. It literally entered our awareness and is now inspiring us to move into a new direction. So, you know, Einstein, I remember, was once asked, how did you come up with the theory of relativity? And he said, oh, I didn't do anything. That happened while I was playing piano. And what he was sharing is that these revelations and discoveries actually come to us. They are the leading wave that causes us to be inspired to move and to look in a certain direction. And then we uncover something. We would have never gotten there without something first catching our eye.
So it sounds like the more open we are to the world in which we live, the more aware we are, the more we grow, and the more we're
Listen,
able to experience.
You know, awareness, I say, is curative. When we see something in a new way, it literally changes everything. we think that things change because I do something over and over again. But if it takes effort to create change, it will take effort to maintain it. And if it takes effort to maintain it, it will not live very long because the whole body functions without effort. Not only the body, the entire universe is based on a fundamental law, the law of parsimony, which means a law of efficiency, a law of least effort. Everything is working in that same way throughout this universe. This idea that we have to make things happen, that we have to continually be rehearsing inside and stressing ourselves to make sure we make the best impression, this is what creates all the stress in the world. You know, before we started speaking today, you and I had never met. You didn't know what was going to happen. And now we find ourselves in a very deep conversation that seemed to emerge on its own and seems to have its own life. I'm suggesting that just as a ventriloquist seems to move the mouth of the dummy so that it looks like the dummy is speaking, there is a major ventriloquist in this universe. It's not a person. It's not anything that's describable. It's an animating force that is breathing us, pumping our hearts, even communicating our message through us. And this may sound like, oh, that's some goofy idea, but it's not an idea. I've had the pleasure of working with about 45,000 people in my life. I have taught all over the world to scientific and non-scientific groups. And theory is not something I'm so interested in.
Dr. Liberman, as I was looking through Luminous Life, How the Science of Life Unlocks the Art of Living, there were so many things that you said that were so thought-provoking, and I certainly appreciated that. One of the things that you said was that in human beings, the ability to meaningfully connect, and I think meaningfully is the key word here, with others is a function of the heart. As I know you know, so often we hear that meaningful connection is a function of the head or your lipstick or your perfume or your car or your designer jeans.
Right.
You're saying none of that has anything to do with anything meaningful.
Right, right. I mean, why do I say that it's a function of the heart? You know, there is an expression, birds of a feather flock together. In other words, creatures or individuals that share something seem to bond and stick together. There is a, when two people connect, the emotional parts of their brains literally start to send out a resonant frequency, a signal, if you will, like a radio. And when that occurs, the two individuals feel in resonance. We call it limbic resonance. There's an aspect of our emotional or feeling life that just feels in tune with the other person. And what's interesting is that when we spend time together, we feel better. Why? Because limbic resonance leads to limbic regulation. In other words, through the contact that we're having, this meaningful contact, my essence is helping your heart to calm down and vice versa. We are literally entraining each other's physiology to be in a place of feeling at ease. we know we're going to be okay. And over time of such a relationship, we have what's called limbic transformation. What initially brought us together because we were birds of a feather and allowed each of us to, in some way, gently share with the other person, even though it's nonverbal, that they're safe with us. That over time causes our brains to change and our total understanding of relationship and love to shift very dramatically. I'm actually talking about science right now, not ideas. This limbic resonance and limbic regulation and limbic transformation is actually something that goes on in our systems. So when we talk about knowing things by heart, It doesn't mean that we've memorized them. It means that there's a knowing that you have no idea where it comes from. When we experience love, there's nothing we can do about it. It just takes us. And when we don't experience love, there's nothing we can do about that either. I guess what I'm saying is, we do not control anything in Mother Nature, and we do not control anything in our physiology other than for a fleeting moment. And yet we think that we're in control of life, where there's nothing else that we are actually controlling. None of us are controlling the tides or the seasons or the weather or what, if it rains or if it doesn't rain. None of us have any long-term control of our heart rate or our pulse or our breathing or anything else. So these ideas that we seem to live by, most of them have no basis in facts. And until we recognize the truth, something doesn't set us free. And the reason we have stress in life is because our mentality does not at all correspond with reality. What life gives us is always what we need. What our minds are continually searching for is what we want. We don't have a big enough view of the picture to know what precisely we need for the species to evolve. Mm. And so I attempt to share this in the book and provide little practical 1-minute awareness expanding exercises or tools so that people can see something in a new way about their vision, about how their breath contracts whenever they start thinking, about how can they can begin to learn without effort rather than with so much stress. And that's what the whole book is about, and that's what my whole message is about, is just to bring an awareness of something that perhaps we've all forgotten about, that's the basis of our lives. And by remembering it, we come back into a state of oneness with life, and our whole life changes, and so does our health as well.
And we certainly know that the impact of chronic stress is never a good thing, and really tightens us, shortens us, diminishes us as individuals, as well as can actually diminish our lifespan.
We are all going to experience stress. I don't care who you are, how evolved you are, what diet you're on, whether you're vegan or eating meat, it doesn't make any difference. It is rare and perhaps impossible for anyone to go through lifetime without getting sick, without losing loved ones, without having fear about finances, without going to the doctor and perhaps getting a diagnosis you didn't expect. None of us can let go in those moments. Those are natural stresses of life. When Buddha said life is difficult, he was speaking about these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care who one is, none of us are comfortable feeling uncomfortable. And so those stresses are there for all of us. No one escapes those. So we're all in the same boat, thank God. What we're speaking about is the stresses that are self-induced.
Yes.
The stresses that we create, you know, because we're running fast, but there isn't a tiger chasing us. And so much of this is based on ideas. I mean, do you realize we are the only species on Earth that exercises? You know, other species, they just move.
Right.
They move by swimming or flying or walking. And sometimes animals have to run because something is chasing them. And humans, the same way. Something comes up and we have to move faster. But this idea, this extracurricular thing where we're going to be running marathons and we're going to be doing all these things, I'm not suggesting there's anything wrong with exercising. I'm saying that to do these things as an idea, as something that isn't natural to our life, it just doesn't have the impact. Meditation is something that really emerge from the East. It's very natural in their culture. They just sit. We do it as some sort of a spiritual practice.
Right.
It doesn't have the same impact for us in the West because for us, our meditation is out in the world. Our life is actually our strongest message. And so recognizing some of these things can really free us up,
Dr.
can
Liberty,
really bring a smile to our face.
You talk about a client of yours, and you say you utilize a gentle light therapy protocol. What is that protocol?
I speak about that both in the book, and we actually create a little product so people can do this at home. I came upon a very profound discovery 40 years ago. I was led to believe when I was working with light that different colors had different impacts because colors are part of the light spectrum. But I didn't find that cookbook approach really held any validity as I started working with thousands of people. In the process of my exploration, I discovered that everyone has colors they like and colors they don't like. And I wondered why that was. So I started physiologically monitoring my patients, their heart rate, their respiration, their muscle tensions, and so on. And what I noticed is that when they thought about or looked at colors that they didn't like, their body started going into a stress response. And I said, wow, that's very unusual. When I actually had them look at these colors for a while, they started getting flashbacks. They started feeling the same level of anxiety they had when they saw their former spouse or former husband or dealt with their father who they had unresolved issues with. And what I uncovered is the colors that we're uncomfortable with are vibrationally related to the experiences in life that we feel comfortable with. The colors we are uncomfortable with or don't like are vibrationally related to the aspects of our life's experience that we're yet not able to embrace. And so when I began having people very gently and systematically spend a little bit more time each day looking at specific colors of light, they gradually became comfortable with the colors. And when they did, not only did their health change, but their comfort level with the parts of life that used to trigger stressful reactions, they became desensitized from those over a while. So I developed a whole protocol where people can purchase a kit with these different colored glasses that I've designed. And they go through a protocol where each day they put on one or two different pairs of glasses, and they just take a breath or two, and they notice how it feels. And as they're gradually able to breathe it in more, they expand. And the reason is, whenever we get stressed, we hold our breath. So when we look at colors we're uncomfortable with, or colors that remind us of something, our breath is constricted. So I gradually allow them to use their breath to gently open at their own rate, not based on some sort of a theory, but based on their own direct guidance. And when people do that, their own life begins to change.
That sounds like a fascinating piece of work that someone can actually do at home. And as I understand, that unit has been FDA cleared. Is that correct?
You're talking about a different unit. You're talking about a vision training device that I developed many, many years ago. And that's called the iPort Vision Training System, that is manufactured and sold by other companies and so on. I'm not involved with that. I was merely the inventor of that. I've invented several different devices that were used by practitioners and therapists and eye doctors and so on. This kit that I'm talking about is not a medical device.
Okay.
It's called the SRS3, Spectral Receptivity System 3. And it's a little affordable kit that people could get on my website at jacoblieberman.org, only if this is something that they're interested in. I'm not interested in selling product, quite frankly. I prefer to share knowledge that hopefully someone will help them to change their life. But it's called the SRS3, and it's a series of 13 little cardboard frames that I have custom designed and have made in Europe for me, that allows someone to actually follow my very simple protocol. There's a 20-page manual with it that explains the impact of light and color and shows how this has been used historically on the skin and through the eyes, so people have a background of what this is. Mm-hmm. And then it shares this very simple way for people to determine the colors they're comfortable and uncomfortable with, the protocol they go through, which is very simple, takes literally seconds or minutes, that's all, each day, and then for people to recheck themselves, to see the changes that have occurred. And it also allows them to see the relationship between the colors they're uncomfortable with and perhaps where problems occur in their body. So it's a wonderful little tool that I designed because I had so many people asking, and most people couldn't afford a medical device that cost thousands of dollars. So we wanted to create something that would be available to anyone.
Yeah, the device that I'm familiar with is this large light machine with glasses and colors, and it is a pretty expensive endeavor, and you can't do it yourself. You need to have the assistance of a practitioner.
And there are practitioners all over the world that do light and color therapy. The approach that I use is very, very different, other than the practitioners that I have trained, because I don't have a system that's based on a theory. I have an approach that is unique for everyone. Each person does it in a way that is natural for them and according to where they're at, not according to some idea and theory that I came up with. And I find that when I recognize that each of us see life differently and each of us respond to life differently, then I realize that everything that we do has to be tailored to that individual. We're discovering that with cancer treatment the same way right now. You know, we're designing these meds and so on that are custom designed for each person, because many of us can get a certain disease, but we may all get it for different reasons.
Exactly.
So we have to take that into account.
Dr. Liberman, in the very short time that we have left, you made yet another, I thought, important observation in your book when you talked about the effects of the blue light on our bodies, the blue lights that emanates from the 9,012 different devices that we have, the phones and the computers and everything
right.
else.
Yeah.
Can you very, very briefly talk to us about that piece of information?
If you look at the sun during the day, the solar spectrum has a high degree of blue light. It also has a high degree of red light and near infrared light. So even though there are high degrees, they're in perfect balance with each other. That's why everything on Earth thrives on light and cannot live without it. That the sunshine is the optimal fuel mix for our engines to run. All of our artificial light sources have a different spectrum than what's natural from the sun. The light that comes out of our computers and cell phones and handheld devices has a very high amount of blue light with very, very little red light. And so during the day, that blue light is what keeps us alert and what triggers our body to do the things that we normally do during the day, which is totally different than what happens at night.
I see.
The timing of all of our physiology, hormonal releases, and so on, is all based on the quality and quantity of light in the environment. When we look at our computers and cell phones at night, the light coming in is not into the eyes is not only strong, but it essentially tells your body that it's daytime when it's actually nighttime.
Dr. Lieberman,
so that,
there is so much more information that I know that you have to share with us. Would you tell us again what your website is?
Yeah, the website is jacoblieberman.org, O-R-G. And Lieberman is spelled L-I-B as in boy, E-R-M-A-N. And come and visit the site. This is not a site that's trying to market and sell you things. It's just a lovely site to visit that offers some wisdom and information that we hope will be helpful to humanity.
Dr. Jacob Israel Lieberman, author of Luminous Life, How the Science of Light Unlocks the Art of Living. Thank you so much for the work that you've done, for the experiences that you've shared, and the work that you continue to do to help all of us live a more natural life.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me on today.
And folks, thank you for joining us on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a medical, mental health, or other professional. You can listen to Mind Talk on demand anytime you choose by going to myndtalk.org. I'd love to hear from you about today's program or any program. Love to know where you are as you're listening to today's program. So do send an email to me at Pamela, that's P-A-M-E-L-A at mindtalk.org. And folks, remember always, if it's unacceptable, it's unacceptable. You take care.